last series of questions were indeed exactly the question we're wrestling with as an organization at the moment. Carl, in fact, gave a quite interesting background of sort of how we've been approaching child survival and health over the years, from, as he said, you know, from the child survival revolution, Jim Grant days, initial focus on the vertical interventions. One caveat as he was speaking, and that is towards, in fact, the end of the 80s, it became increasingly clear that particularly in the African continent, the, let's say, campaign style approaches, initially to immunization, but then also later on to some of the other interventions, for an example, promotion of oral rehydration, were not sustainable. What we saw was this infamous, how do you call it, this roller coaster, sick saw in immunization coverage in much of Africa. And so already in those days, the end of the 80s, there was a lot of discussion within the organization, within Africa, on how to make these approaches more sustainable, more community-based, which then led in 87 to the Bamako Initiative being launched by the ministers of health all over Africa, which had as one of the phenomena community cost sharing, which is what much of the discussion is focused on, but which has as another, and to many of us in retrospect, most important criterion, the community partnerships, community empowerment by communities managing the drugs, managing the funding coming in from the cost sharing at that moment. As on the other hand, as rightly pointed out beforehand, within the pendulum of approaches, swinging, in fact, we've been doing in the context of the State of the World Children a bit of a review with the help of Carl and Henry here, a bit of a review of child survival approaches in the last century, since the beginning of the century, which makes very clear how the pendulum has been swinging constantly between vertical, horizontal approaches, vertical, starting in the colonial period with systems on the one hand, Francophone areas, vertical, then smallpox, then the attempt at malaria, then primary healthcare, then the selective primary healthcare. At some moment here again, we were back in the 80s towards more community-based approaches, at least in Africa. That again was swung away in the 90s, the end of the 90s. Within the organization, the attention shifted to child rights, but also globally, the attention started then heavily switching over to sector-wide approaches. Later on, poverty reduction strategies, but particularly in terms of sector-wide approaches, less focused on outcomes, more focused on process, and in which, again, communities were largely forgotten because the sector-wide approaches were largely being conceived at central level. So that's a piece of history. Now, what is changing at the moment? A couple of things. First of all, the Millennium Development Goals, both within the organization but also globally, have the major impact on putting organizations back onto an outcome-oriented approach. Not so much in 2000 itself when this was launched, but as we are moving, as the clock is ticking, and we're moving towards 2015, and we're seeing results, we'll come back to that in a moment, we're seeing how slow the progress is at the moment towards those Millennium Development Goals. The focus is back on, in this case for us, child survival and safe motherhoods, MDG 4 and 5, particularly because MDG 6, particularly the HIV/AIDS and malaria parts of it, have had major funding movement towards this. So there's, at the moment, over the past couple of years, an increased focus back on MDGs 4 and 5 being sort of the forgotten MDGs compared to, for an example, MDG 6 at the moment. Linked to that, there is a rapidly expanded quantity of financial resources to expand and strengthen maternal and child health programs. Again, as we said, much of the money has been going to HIV/AIDS, towards malaria. In both cases, HIV/AIDS with the problems of implementing effective programs for ARVs, heart, and prevention of mother-to-child transmission. For malaria, given the high cost of combination treatment of ACTs at the moment, in both cases, there is an interest back towards integration, interest back towards system strengthening, and within the context of that interest in system strengthening, an interest in integrated programs, because as we're strengthening systems, the outcomes cannot only, should not only be HIV/AIDS, malaria outcomes, but have to be maternal outcomes, have to be child survival outcomes as well. So an increasing amount of money, increasing focus on systems, and more recent, an increasing focus back on MDG 4 and 5 with money behind it. Why? What we see here in, it's not legible on the right, but this is the evolution of under 5 mortality in blue in Africa and in red, orange reddish, in South Asia. At the bottom in the other region, Latin America, Middle East and East Asia. Now what is plain and clear is first of all that the levels of under 5 mortality, particularly in Africa and South Asia, remain far above the levels in Latin America, East Asia and the Middle East. But also that what you see at in this blue spot here, this is the level Africa would have to get to meet the MDG. This is where we are now. This is the tendency. If the present tendency continues, the objective of a 2/3 reduction of under 5 mortality in the year 15 will be achieved. It will be achieved, but will not be 2015. It will be 2115. We'll get there. We'll get there. But we have a slight problem there. Same thing here. This is the rate of progress that is needed to actually get there. The actual percentage of annual rate of reduction, and what we see in sub-Saharan Africa, that where we are presently, so to move from, well, it doesn't matter, to move from the situation where we are now here to the actual Millennium Development Goal here, the rate would all of a sudden have to increase to a 10% reduction per year, which is a daunting task. Sorry, it's a bit slow in reacting. Should I just click, or do I? Yeah. It's not our prime characteristic. Okay, but when we come back to this, we hope. It's not. Okay.
You have to click on it first, Rudy.
Thank you. Okay. Now, two conclusions then. One, the achievement of MDG 4 will depend on accelerating interventions in South Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa. That's where a lot of our time and energy at the moment is going. Another very important one, and that is following, as well documented in the Lancet series on neonatal care. 4 million neonatal deaths out of the 10 million, or less than 10 million now, under 5 deaths. So, achievement of MDG 4 will depend heavily on success with neonatal interventions. Now, the original older idea was that that can only happen in sophisticated, high-tech hospitals with high-tech neonatal care. The Lancet series very clearly sort of undid that myth by pointing out that up to 50% of neonatal mortality can actually be prevented in community settings and in through community-based approaches. So, where we are as an organization increasingly going to is considering community-based approaches, or what we, the term we like to use is community-based partnerships, community partnerships, essential for major progress in reducing neonatal mortality, particularly in low-resource settings, essential for major progress in reducing mortality from pneumonia, malaria, and also for improving nutrition. We just saw it's a major underlying factor in there. And through the reduction of malnutrition, reducing mortality. What are some of the emerging initiatives? Carl was mentioning on and on the role of Jim Grant. Our present executive director is highly and very personally committed to health and committed to both MDG 4, child survival, and MDG 5, and overall towards the MDGs. She has a very strong outcome orientation and outcome focus, and is basically whipping the organization up by asking the question at any moment in time, where are the results, where are the results, where are the results? Enough process, where are the results on this? We had a meeting where Henry was present in Dakar, an all-Africa meeting of all of our representatives with a series of experts invited from the outside, in which, in fact, the focus was for 2 full days on community-based approaches. She stayed 2 full days. She managed the discussions 2 full days. She wrapped up the discussions for 2 full days. And we have an organization now that is heavily, heavily pushed towards taking to scale community-based approaches and not only answer the questions that Carl was asking at the end there. Because the point for us is not answering the questions, but get this done. So get the financing done, get the motivation of the community workers done, get the packages sorted out in each country, get this into the national policies and move it up, scale it up. So the basic discussion over the past year in the organization, the first year when she moved in, it was on focusing on health, which interventions, how to package them. The last year, the past year, it is on how to scale up these packages, how to scale up community-based approaches. The State of the World Children coming out early 2008 is fully devoted to that. It is on child survival, and a very important core part of it, after describing this swinging pendulum over the last 100 years, a core part of it, and several here to my left has heavily contributed to this, and in fact written a large part of the community partnership chapters in there. It is largely focusing on community partnerships and how to scale this up, how to build this into national programs as a key strategy to accelerate child survival and development. So for us, there's no contradiction, certainly not, between community-based approaches and outcomes in terms of child survival. The two go hand in hand together. The experience that in fact our present strategies are based on is, among others, an experience in Africa, where over the past series of years we've been working on accelerating child survival through a series of packages: Immunization Plus, Antenatal Care Plus, IMCI Plus, basically focusing on demonstration in the field of the scaling up of 3 service delivery modes. Community and family-based care, population-oriented outreach services, and clinical care. We've been spending a lot of time the last series of years working out in the field what the particular opportunities and challenges are to scale up these 3 service delivery modes. And one of the major lessons is that there are enormous differences between these service delivery modes, both in terms of opportunities and in terms of bottlenecks. So that in our present strategies, and this has been put together jointly now by the World Bank, WHO and UNICEF, in what we call a strategic framework and investment case for the health MDGs in Africa. In that framework, we in fact have worked out, depending on the particular bottlenecks in different types of African countries, a phasing over time, a phasing of the strengthening of first and foremost outreach services and family and community-based care, while over time strengthening the health systems and therefore laying a foundation to strengthen clinical time, clinical care capacity, human resources, the more specialized human resources over time. What we found in this large scale, it wasn't really operational research, but it was for us very much as an organization, large scale experimentation in, as we showed earlier, in 11 countries in West Africa, covering 17 million people, experimenting with these 3 service delivery modes, and different packages of care. What we mainly learned in there is, one, this phasing; two, the fact that, or the observation that, coverage can be accelerated in a very short time frame if interventions are properly packaged, if there is a focus on indeed the highest impact evidence-based interventions, and if lastly the focus is rightly in the beginning on these outreach services and this family community-based care. using the Lancet way to estimate the impact of coverage of proven interventions on mortality. Our estimates are in that program that over 2 years, 18,000 child lives were saved, which corresponded to an average of about an estimated 20% reduction in under 5 mortality. What that basically shows is that that 10% per year, that 9.9% per year, is doable if we focus on the right interventions, packaged in the right way, if we address system bottlenecks, but really zoom in and focus on those system bottlenecks. And this, again, comes very much from the functional analysis approach. Yeah, that's some of us learned at Hopkins from several of you in the room here some years ago. What we're doing is putting the functional analysis into practice, identifying these real main bottlenecks, focusing on that, zooming in on that, and it works in practice in a serial way. How is this being translated at the moment on a global scale through a joint UNICEF joint health and nutrition strategy? Focus obviously on mothers, newborns and children. Health and nutrition together, very much so, as evidenced by the Nargwal work, the synergy between health and nutrition. We are very strongly trying to operationalize that by scaling the two health and nutrition programs up together. Focus on evidence-based analysis for policy and action. One of the things we're focusing on these days is our investment cases. Investment cases in which four developing countries, four high mortality, high under 5 maternal mortality countries, we do an analysis not only of the epidemiology, but then also of the present coverage of proven high impact interventions, bottlenecks for those, strategies to address them, potential increases in coverage, which we call coverage frontiers, that can be achieved through this, the marginal cost of scaling up the coverage and removing the system bottlenecks. We can then compare, we estimate the impact that can be expected from this scaling up. We can compare the impact to the cost and get an estimate of the cost per life saved of these approaches, of these strategies. And then finally, these investment cases go into the budgeting requirements, the extra financial requirements, and the fiscal space in countries to actually do this. The reason why we're doing this is that scaling up community-based approaches like other health approaches largely depends on political will and on the purse string holders, on the money being put out. Money is determined by ministers of finance. Ministers of finance need very clear cases, investment cases, to decide to put the money into health rather than into roads or into education. So what we're trying to do more and more, using the approaches we described earlier on, is develop these investment cases to convince policymakers, to convince ministers of finance. We also, with similar approaches, are working on developing enabling institutional frameworks, namely sector-wide approaches, PRSPs, and medium-term expenditure frameworks, by making sure that these quite dry national tools become child survival-oriented, maternal survival-oriented, outcome-oriented, and that these have a strong community-based component in them. Now, how? Again, by demonstrating that community partnerships, community-based approaches, are not only nice things for small NGOs around a tree in a village, but make sense, make pure sense from an investment point of view, that it is the best, most cost-effective investment of money to save child lives and to achieve the Millennium Development Goals. Conclusion, therefore, we're not continuing the vertical structures established in the past. A quote taken from the strategy: it is vital that interventions be taken to scale in an integrated and system-building manner to ensure sustainability. And this includes within the strategy a strong focus on empowering and building the capacities of poor communities, women and families. The international community is increasingly following this. As I've said earlier on, there is increasing resources available and political interest in MDG 4 and 5. The most recent proofs of this are the launches of an international health partnerships in the UK by Gordon Brown in September. here in New York later on the launch of the global campaign for MDGs 4 and 5 at the Clinton Initiative meeting by Norway, which is investing, has committed $1 billion. Now, for that, the UK then following, putting major money into MDG 5, and now next week, this coming week in fact, Canada, the Canadian Prime Minister, is going to launch what is called the Catalytic Initiative, which is to accelerate progress towards MDG 4, child survival, through a system strengthening way, again in high mortality countries. Norway and the World Bank are working on an initiative on results-based financing. Germany with France on an initiative of Angela Merkel, together with France, the G8 initiative is working on providing for health, and that is a large-scale initiative to change the financing approaches, again, to accelerate progress to MDGs 4 and 5. The Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, has just launched, or relaunched, the Secretary General's initiative for the health MDGs, for the MDGs in Africa, which includes, again, strong emphasis on MDG 4 and 5. So there is, at the moment, a lot of political attention to all of this. Now, finally, why is this review so important for us? Because it's completely timely. Everything I'm describing to you now means that we need to act on solid information. But this review, for us, came as something sort of falling, not falling out of the sky, but as a godsend. Something is, we are under heavy pressure to scale up. We want to be sure that, one, scaling up, we are evidence-based. Our senior management is insisting that we're evidence-based. We fundamentally cannot afford at this moment in the scaling up to not do this on a sound basis. This review to us is providing that basis by summarizing the evidence that family and community interventions are effective in improving child health, merit priority widespread applications, but that also application of this approach, this strategy, is most relevant in resource-poor settings, the sub-Saharan Africas, the South Asias, where major improvements in the standard of living and in the health system will not be forthcoming in the short to medium term. This does not mean that we're exclusively focusing on community-based care. We're focusing on what we call a continuum of care, family community, not only continuum in terms of the life cycle, from pregnancy, from pre-pregnancy, adolescent girls, into the older children, but also continuity in place, and that is focusing on family and community care, backed up by outreach services, backed up by primary healthcare services, backed up by referral care. But we are clearly coming from the bottom, from the community partnerships, the community-based care, and are promoting to build systems up this way, bottom-up. Final implication of the review that's important for us is that it provides strong support for the expansion of field research on how to improve the effectiveness of community-based approaches, especially those which integrate priority interventions with full collaboration and participation of communities. So in other words, the whole focus being on how to and how to scale up, we're looking at this review to provide us the evidence of how to scale up. Thank you.
Well, I was learning so much from this last comments of Rudy that I didn't cut him off. I'm afraid that we've run over some. We do have 10 minutes. And we'll take some questions. Obviously, there are many questions that we're all asking at this point. And let's just get right into some questions that you think are important. And I guess we will get a chance to respond to some. I suppose we can stay in the room a little bit, because I know we have thrown so much at you that it's going to be hard to get all the questions answered. So who wants to go first with a question? Yeah.
Vice,
could
you tell us who you are? Jim Ricca at Child Survival Technical Support, Macro International. Great presentation. It's very, very interesting. I'm particularly addressing, I guess, to Rudy. What role do you see
ahead. Can they hear you, Rudy?
I was suggesting to Carl, why don't we let several people ask questions and then we'll answer in various questions together at the microphone so you can hear.
I think that would be better. So let's have three more questions and then we'll wind up after that with the responses to the questions. So three more questions. Oh, great. You only have, okay, one. Another question, and we'll then have a chance to answer them. One more? Yes, Laura.
Just a very quick one. Yes, the focus is very strongly on NGOs. The way our executive director is very strongly insisting that we do not only do this to governments. Many of the countries that we're working in are pretty fragile states. Fragile states, take an example, in large parts of Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, in large parts of countries just coming out of war now, Sierra Leone, etc. The NGOs are the key agencies that are present. They are at the base. The way we go around the dilemma that many of the NGOs are working on a relatively smaller scale is by working with larger NGOs to help in capacity building of the smaller NGOs and to help in coordination of that. And a good example is Ghana, Upper Eastern region in Ghana, where in the context of this program that we presented earlier on, there had been 20, 30 smaller NGOs working in different parts of this region. The Red Cross helped them together with the Ghanaian Health Services to build the capacity, harmonize approaches between these different NGOs, bring them together and have them all follow the same types of strategies, which has been extremely successful. There's a major reduction in under 5 mortality, major shoot-ups and coverage in that region. So yes, we work with them, but with different types. And we're looking, in fact, actively for these larger NGOs to help build capacities, support smaller NGOs to take this to scale.
Yeah, with respect to the question about how many articles, how much evidence is there from urban settings as opposed to rural settings, I would say that 95% of the studies that are included in our review are from rural areas. There's very little still in the way of these kinds of studies carried out in urban areas, even though we know that the future of this type of work is going to need to be carried out in urban low-income areas. So that's a great area of need, and I think it's something that we need to highlight in our recommendations and conclusions, which, by the way, I have, for any of you who might be interested, I've got a copy of the draft findings and recommendations up here if you'd like to have that at the end. Laura's question about whether or not any high-level policy interventions will be a part of our study. I did mention in the beginning that we are planning a section of our report on findings from social and political environment and how that affects child health. And there is, for example, a long history of writing and discussion about Kerala, India, and Costa Rica, and Cuba, and so forth. And you know, we want to have that represented in the report. And if there are other examples of interventions at the high policy level, at the national level, that have made a demonstrated impact on child health or did not have a demonstrated impact on child health, and we want to include that too. It's you might argue whether that's a part of community-based primary health care, but we are making an attempt to be somewhat comprehensive in this and include things that are not traditionally what we think of as formal health care services delivery if there is strong evidence that it improves child health, because that's our goal, not to simply provide services, of course.
I hate to say this, but the review hasn't finished, and we're still collecting good studies and data. Sorry to say that. And so we're, as you said, there's many different ways we collect data and reports, and some of you might know of successful urban programs or unsuccessful urban child survival programs. We'd like to hear about it. Another area in which we're deficient in information is HIV interventions, HIV and AIDS interventions for children. We're particularly deficient in that area. So if you know of someone, particularly, you might know of published things, but particularly of grey matter. As long as it's a reasonable evaluation, we want to hear about it, and we would very much like to include it. Now, please remember that we're still working at all the different levels, both collecting new data as well as analysing.
I see that we are very close to the end. Let me just say, is there one more question that we can take up, and then we'll have some concluding comments from the people here? Anybody have? Okay. Yes.
Things on that. We are, quote, fighting tooth and nail in all those discussions to make sure that communities are the bottom, the heart of systems. And we're using a framework, which I'm not showing here, but we're using essentially a conceptual framework that's the same framework that the World Bank uses, by the way, that makes very clear that health is produced in households and in families. Health is not produced in facilities. We're using very strong advocacy material, which also is in this series, of where children die. And that the bulk of the children obviously die, yeah, at home without care. So that's one. The way to go around this again, however, is to convince health system managers that, let's say, that the key bottlenecks for whatever they do are at that family community level. Demand, compliance, yeah, timely use of care, of the clinical care, but that also a large number of let's say, if interventions that now clog the clinical system, the malaria treatments, the diarrhea managements, the pneumonia managements, can be handled effectively at community level and therefore free up time at the higher levels. Now, we do this through this, quote, bottleneck analysis, where we demonstrate for each of these service delivery modes what the bottlenecks are, how they can be addressed, and we turn this then into investment cases. And here again, to convince not only purse string holders, but system people, that it's worthwhile to invest at community level. The way we do it is by clearly demonstrating the costs and the impact, the expected impact and the cost that can be achieved by that as compared to other approaches. So the answer is, we're fighting for it.
Tom, thank you for bringing that up. Maybe all of you don't know about this, but starting, I guess, back in the mid-90s, WHO began a major push for integrated management of childhood illness that was exclusively focused on facilities, and they set about a very progressive and extensive evaluation of the effectiveness of introducing IMCI at the facility level in 5 countries. And over the course of 10 or 11 years now, there's been some very high quality research that's done on that. I think it's great that they did that. As Tom mentioned, to me, I mean, there's all kinds, the number of reports talking about how they improved the quality and how the cost has gone down, but there was no mortality impact of any of those studies. But unfortunately, the people involved in those haven't really used that evidence to push the community approach as the way to make a mortality impact. And I've been thinking about maybe I should write an article on this, but I mean, this is a very powerful message that just isn't being pushed forward by the scientific community. I think that's unfortunate.
One last comment, and that is that the soldiers on the ground are few, but the battle is a big one. Carl earlier on mentioned that we have a group, the Community-Based Primary Healthcare Working Group. It's part of the APHA, and we're having our annual business meeting at 5:30 tomorrow in room 204B. So we'd very much like you all to come along and get involved to what extent that you can. We're a very diverse group and open to many different approaches. Some of you might like to help do this work. Some of you might have other burning issues in the field which you'd like to promote. You'd like to have some people help you support you in your work. We're open to all of this. So please accept our open invitation to come along.
Thank you. Yes, and we have run out of time, and we'll be glad to stay and talk with those of you who want to come up and talk with us here. Let me just make my own personal concluding comment, which is for those of us who have been working on these issues over a long period of time, it's very encouraging to see the way we think there is an awareness now of some of the issues that we've not been paying attention to. We think that there is a possibility that we will be able to begin to do some of the things that Rudy and others are beginning to talk about from the way in which the people in the bigger agencies at this point are responding. And this is all the kind of thing that some of us who've been around a long time have seen come and go in the past. We're not sure just how it's going to work out. The main reason for having a presentation here is to begin to share what is going on, what we see happening, and some awareness then of getting more people talking about things that we've been talking about here, and beginning to really put together some more systematic efforts to make these changes happen. So we feel very much sort of like seeing a wave coming, and you're on a surfboard and you want to catch that wave. And it's a very exciting time, but it's also a time in which we realize that it's very, very difficult to really do what we're talking about. And we don't want to get entrapped into making commitments that we are not really aware of how we can carry those out. And so I think that as we do move forward in this type of activity, we realize that this is an opportunity. We must do what we can in order to make the review contribute to what's going on. But I think it's also a time when we all know how many pressures there are in so many different directions at the present time, and where we can really begin to see a change is something we all are hoping for, but it's going to take a lot of work. And so I think the point that was made by Paul just now about getting more people involved in this kind of activity is the point that I'd like to end on. I think that we're just starting a very important process, and it needs to be given more attention, especially in gathering the data. I'm doing studies now that will really begin to answer these key questions. So thank you for coming, and we appreciate the way you've paid attention to this issue, which is, as far as I'm concerned, high time that we're paying this kind of attention. Thank you.